Well, hello and welcome to episode 12 of Hull Seahawks Behind the Curtain. And as I'm sure you can tell from the title of this episode, this is a very, very special one indeed. Not only am I joined by Matty Davis, head coach and GM of the Hull Seahawks, I'm joined by former player coach of the Hull Stingrays, Sylvain Cloutier. Absolute pleasure to have you on, sir. How are you?
I'm doing great, thanks. Thank you for having me.
And of course, Matty, since we dreamt this idea up around 2 months ago, of course, we've celebrated the Seahawks for 11 episodes now, but it's always been in the back of the mind, hasn't it? We've got to get some of the old legends from the Stingrays days on too.
Yeah, for sure. This is, you know, all part of sort of the plan of what we're trying to do. And, you know, the first part, obviously, we you know, honoured Tens and got him back. And yeah, these are just the little things that I think, you know, is the right way to do stuff. And yeah, there's no bigger person in my career that, you know, had the biggest impact for me. So yeah, it's an honour to have Clutes on.
Of course, you know, a top character, a legend of the sport here in Hull. You know, your name is up there on the rafters as well for everyone to see, and we'll mention that a little bit later. But we'll start off where we start with most of our guests, Sylvain, and that is, you know, yourself as a little youngster. How did he get into hockey, and sort of at what point did you know this was the game for you?
Well, I started skating when I was 4. My dad showed me how to skate. It was back in Mount Laurier, Quebec. You know, he took me out to an outdoor rink, and that's how I learned. And after that, it was just, they got me signed up and ended up playing for a team in Mount Laurier for a few years. And then we ended up moving to Sault Ste. Marie, Ontario, where I played all my minor hockey growing up. And once I hit midget hockey around the age of 15, it's when agents and scouts from the OHL started talking to me. So that's when I kind of figured out, you know, you don't really realize, you don't think you know you can play the game, but you don't realize that you're that good and people are after you. And at that time, you know, we had meetings at our apartment at the time where my parents lived, and they've come from Toronto. They want to represent you. And, you know, Sault Ste. Marie being a small town, you're trying to figure out if you can trust these people. And, but you know, then you get drafted to the OHL, and then, you know, it's your dream as a young kid in Ontario. I mean, especially when we grew up in Sault Ste. Marie, the Sault Ste. Marie Greyhounds, a team in the OHL, and that's who you wanted to play for. I didn't get that opportunity to play for them in my hometown. I got drafted by the Guelph Storm at the time. So I had to leave home at 16. Went to a French high school in Sault Ste. Marie. Ended up having to go to an English high school. That was tough. It was tough leaving home. I was homesick at the time, and going to an English high school, which I'd never done before. Obviously, it's helped me tremendously learn the language and stuff. But yeah, going to Guelph, and then you realize you're playing in the OHL, you're having, you know, a really good season, and now your agent, now you're talking to NHL scouts, are taking you out for dinner, they're questioning you. That's when I kind of realized that, yeah, this is a big deal now. It's something I want to do.
Of course, Matt, it seems like a whole world away from, I'm sure yourself as a 15, 16-year-old playing hockey in Hull. It's difficult to comprehend.
Yeah, it's a different world, I guess. And, you know, you grow up over here, and like we spoke about this the other day, but you're just not, them things you just don't even, you know, you can't even comprehend that because it's just not on your, don't get me wrong, like as soon as, you know, you get into the game and you realise sort of, you know, you get playing ice hockey, you sort of hear about the NHL, you just, you know, you think, oh yeah, you know, you want to play in the NHL, but really it's, you know, it couldn't be further away. I mean, we grow up here just, you know, playing football and that's just what everyone knows. And, you know, me and Clutes played five aside for a long time. So we, you know, he gets it, how big it is over here, football. And, you know, I know his daughter's played as well. And yeah, it's just, that's just the way it is, right? It's just two different worlds that I've, you know, made, you know, their main sports are just are different. And yeah, I mean, over here, if you get into ice hockey, it's probably a little bit of a weird one, really. I guess it's a bit of a lucky if you're lucky enough to sort of be decent at the game, then yeah, you can obviously do all right and have a decent career. But you know, it's obviously a world away from sort of where Klutz grew up and, you know, the level that he played in growing up, yeah, coming through.
Of course, let's talk about those times in sort of the OHL. So in the course, drafted by the Guelph Storm. 3 years there, played in, you know, you look at the names, you know, some long time NHLers in those teams as well. And you were part of a real drive for that team, of course. I think your first season, I think it was bottom of the ladder, and then sort of work, and it was a continuous improvement, wasn't it, every season? Just a lot of guys working hard.
Yeah, it was. I mean, we first went to Guelph. They moved the team from Hamilton, Ontario to Guelph. And Mike Kelly, the general manager, took over the team. And basically, when we came in the camp, we had a lot of, they had a lot of draft picks. They drafted really well. But they ended up trading all the older players away, the veteran guys. So we ended up being very young. We won 4 games all season and they got a 66. It was a learning season. We went through adversity, but I think it was a great lesson too for us, like fighting through that and having to compete every night against old, like 19-year-olds. We're 16 and 17. So, but yeah, by the third season, I think we're ranked 10th in Canada. And after I left, the new group came in. I think they ended up, like, they've had success for so many years in Guelph. They've done a great job at drafting and building that program. But the thing is that the disappointment that third year we had in Guelph is that we ran into a hot goalie in Sault Ste. Marie. Dan Cluche ended up beating us 4 straight games and knocking us out of the playoffs in the second round. So we had the better team, but he was hot that series. And it was a sad way to end, because you play with these guys for 3 years and then you got to go your different way, your own way. But, you know, I was sad, but I was happy. It was my brother that beat us, not someone else. But yeah, to talk about some of the names we played with, I mean, you know, we had Todd Bertuzzi was on our team. Jeff O'Neill was on our team. We had Ruben Nadur at the time was there also. It was a roommate of mine in Guelph. We roomed together, our Billet family. We've had other guys that made it too. Trying to think, Ryan Rizador was a big D-man. We had Mike Rusk was a second-round draft pick to Chicago. Great defender. Should have, you know, had a decent career. We had Mark MacArthur in goal. I think he played over in England for a bit in that Super League. I think he came over. So, no, they did a really good job at drafting guys. And then, you know, we had Mike Prokopek. We picked up guys at trade deadline, like a guy like Mike Prokopek and Ryan Vanderbush, who had a long career in the NHL as a heavyweight fighter. We were pretty tough. We were also forgetting here. Ken Belanger was another guy that was a monster of a guy that, you know, he can fight. He played in the NHL with Boston and Toronto a long time. So there was a lot of characters and different guys. But playing with Bertuzzi and O'Neill, obviously they had probably the longest careers in the NHL. And, you know, with Bert, I actually got to see them about 3 weeks ago. Our general manager, Mike Kelly, got inducted in the Guelph Hall of Fame. So we all got back together. So I hadn't seen Todd Bertuzzi and those guys, Jeff O'Neill, all our former teammates. We all got back together and hadn't seen them since I left junior hockey. So it was over 20 years I hadn't seen them. So because they never really played in the American League, so I never ran into them. And then when I was called up in the NHL, I never played against those guys. So we played different teams. But yeah, it was nice. It's always nice to have a reunion. It was just like we've never left each other, right? You played together for a long time. That's the thing with the hockey world. Like, you're friends for life, really. Like, you know, like I haven't seen Maddie in a long time, but just seeing him here, it's like we were together last week, right? So, no, it was a great experience playing in the OHL and playing with those guys in Guelph.
No, I can certainly imagine it. But something, obviously, you've mentioned there, of course, you know, yourself and, you know, a lot of the guys there, you know, you all made it to the NHL, and to do that for the vast, vast majority of players, and it's through the draft. What is that sort of process like, and sort of how does it feel once it's all over and you've officially been drafted to the NHL?
Well, my draft year was in Montreal, so it was in the city where, you know, I'm a Montreal Canadian fan. So walking into the Forum, the old Montreal Arena, the Montreal Forum, was pretty exciting. Through that process though of getting drafted, like I did a lot of interviews. Like I know times have changed now. They do a lot of different things with the players, the testing and off ice testing, on ice. They bring the kids in and even a lot of questions, a lot of answers. They try to get to know you. But the two teams that were really after me at the time where I did a lot of meetings was with the Toronto Maple Leafs and the LA Kings at the time. And I thought for sure I was going to Toronto. Like Detroit, I'd spoken just once. And I had like two last minute meetings in Montreal in the hotel room at Toronto. And yeah, so I thought for sure I was going. But that year of the draft, I think I was ranked 21st in the draft. But that wasn't counting the Europeans at the time because it was the first year the Russians were allowed to come in our draft and stuff. So ended up falling and getting drafted 70th. I thought I was going to Toronto in the second round, but it didn't happen. And then I was sitting there waiting, you know, my agent, we talk, he told me I'd probably be a second round pick with all the Europeans coming in. And at the end of the day, I got drafted. I was excited. It was Detroit. You know, I was excited at the time. And then when you sit at home and you look at Detroit's lineup, you're like, oh my God, like who are you going to knock off this roster? I mean, they had Steve Yzerman, Sergei Fedorov, Igor Larionov, Chris Draper at center. So you're a centerman, you got drafted there and you're going, wow. But as a young kid, I'm like, ah, you know what? I'm pretty good. I was pretty confident. Like, you know, when you're younger, you're a bit arrogant and you think you know it all, you have it all. So I was like, yeah, I'm going to go in there. But you know what? When I got there, I realized it was another level and how hard I had to work to get to the next level. And basically, that's what I did after that. I mean, you want to stay on top and try to make it. But Detroit, out of the 4 years I spent with their farm system in Adirondack, I think we had two guys call up. One was Mark Major, who got called up for one game to play in Toronto. It was to fight Domi because he was a heavyweight fighter. And I think Darren McCarthy might have been out at the time. And then the other guy was Jamie Pusher, a big defenseman. They ended up having a long career. I think now he's assistant general manager of the Tampa Bay Lightning. But those were the only two call-ups out of the 4 years I was there. So, you know, it tells you how good. That's the year Scotty Bowman coached Detroit and they were going to the finals and battling with Colorado. And, you know, they were so successful. So it was tough, but you know what? The last year in Adirondack, my contract was up. Kenny Holland phoned me. And they gave me the option to either renew for another year. And basically, not that they had given up on me, but they wanted me to be the so-called older guy, leader in the dressing room at 24 years old. So I was like, I felt in my mind, I was still young enough, right, to get a chance. So he called me, he said, look around and see if there's anything available. And that's when Chicago came calling and offered us a two-year contract. And then I had to call Kenny Holland back and tell him, I'm going to try to go to Chicago and see what happens. So.
Of course, it must be such a difficult decision. You got to think to know you've played obviously so long in Adirondack, you know, 4 years as you say. But the situation you've mentioned where just you look up, you're thinking, where's the opportunity going to arise? You know, the lack of the players getting called up, you back yourself, don't you, to go and make it elsewhere? And it, you know, you can't blame yourself whatsoever. So moving on to the you know, time in Chicago then. Of course, 7 games in the NHL. What was it like when you arrived in Chicago? Was it a case of, did you think you were gonna get the chance pretty early? Was it a case of, you know, waiting for the spot to open up?
Well, it was pretty interesting, actually, because, well, if I go back 1 second, go back to Adirondack, I could have easily stayed in Adirondack with the Red Wings because it was comfortable, right? I knew everybody. I knew all the staff in Detroit. I knew all the coaches. Like, I could walk in and have conversation with Scotty Bowman and those guys. I was comfortable enough because I used to play all the exhibition games for them. But and Katie had friends in Adirondack. So it's not just, you're not just a single guy now. You're married and, you know, she was happy in Adirondack. And, you know, you always got to think of your partner. And, you know, God bless them because they, if it wasn't for them, like, who knows, right? Because you need their support. But yeah, so it was a hard decision. And we go to Chicago, I go to training camp. I'm really excited. You know, I'm like, yeah, I got a chance. They didn't make the playoffs, I think, the year before. They're a so-so team. They told me I had a chance. I get there 3 days into camp. I got sent down to Indianapolis and I was like, I sat in that meeting with Bob Murray, the general manager, and I was just like in shock. Like, I honestly, I had tears. Well, Matty can attest, I'm a pretty emotional guy. And I got so emotional, I was so frustrated that, you know, I signed here and then 3 days into camp. So basically, Dirk Graham, who was the coach, basically sent all of us down. Like, they had two farm teams at the time. So they sent half to Portland, Maine, and then half to Indianapolis at the time in the IHL, which was the same as the AHL. So they sent me down to the IHL, call Katie and tell her, like, yeah, I just got sent down. I hadn't been there a week, I think, at training camp, which had never happened compared to being in Detroit. But obviously, for some reason, I got sent down. They had to look at other people, and that's basically how you got to look at it. But so I went down to Indianapolis and played for a guy there, probably one of my favorite coaches of all time. Learned a lot from him, Bruce Cassidy. He just won the Stanley Cup here. He was our coach in Indianapolis, and a great man, great guy. And he pulled me aside because when I played in Adirondack, they used me more in a penalty-killing role, shutdown type centerman. And he remembered me from my OHL days where I was a goal scorer and put up a lot of numbers. And, you know, and when you become a pro, you got to accept your role and do the role for the team. I mean, when you're part of a team, you got to accept those jobs. And if you don't want to do that, it's like you're not buying into what your coach has got to say, right? It's either you're in or out. There's no in between. So I bought into Adirondack. I was excited. I wanted to play, and I bought into that role. So when I went to Indy, Bruce Cassidy pulled me aside and he said, you know, I think you can score 20 goals in this league. He goes, you're going to get every opportunity. He goes, I believe in you. I've seen what you can do in the OHL. And it just took some guy to believe that believes in you, right? And it goes a long way when your coach believes in you and gives you that confidence. So I ended up scoring 21 goals that year in Indy. And he got me called up to Chicago. So I'll never forget the call. We were lying in bed. I mean, Katie, it was around 9:30 at night. Huge snowstorm in Indianapolis and Chicago, which... So Bruce Cassidy calls me. It was around 9:30. He says, what are you doing? I said, oh, just lying in bed. Because we, you know, I get up, go to practice the next day. But he's like, yeah, just pack your suitcase. You're going up to Chicago. You're playing tomorrow night. So, you know, got very emotional with Katie. We got to share that together. And then obviously first phone call my parents, and then called her parents, and then called my brother. And then got on a plane that night, sat at the airport in Indianapolis. They weren't sure if they were going to let us take off. And I was like, fingers crossed, because there was a huge snowstorm. Finally, we took off. I landed maybe at 1:30 in the morning, 2 o'clock, got to the hotel in Chicago. Took the cab from the Chicago airport to the hotel, and I get there and they don't even have a room for me. They're sold out. So she's like, well, we're sorry. We know they had a deal with the Chicago Blackhawks. They're like, well, we can put a cot in this conference room. And I was like, Jesus. And I go, what? You know, all the time, so I was so frustrated at the time because late, I wanted to get some sleep because, you know, I didn't want to be tired for the next day. But anyways, I ended up spending the night in this huge conference room, which, to be honest, I was scared because it was dark and I was by myself in this huge room. I didn't sleep much. Got picked up the next morning by Brian Muir, defenseman for Chicago, picked me up, took me to the pregame skate. And then that night, Chris Chelios handed me my jersey and my stall and said, welcome to the Blackhawks. And went on the ice, to be honest, in warm up. I had no legs. I was shaking. I was nervous. I was excited. When you get that not that I was tired, it was just the excitement. My legs were shaking. They weren't there. So my first shift, I'll never forget it. I won a face off in the D zone. I think it was. Yeah. D zone. And then we won it. We got out, we dumped it in because I was playing with Bob Probert and Reed Simpson on my line, two heavyweight fighters. Great guys. I got right off because I was so nervous. So I think my shift might have been 5 seconds, my first one. And then the nerves calmed down and I'm like, you know, it's just game of hockey, right? So I relaxed, took it all in, and then finally got going.
Obviously, fantastic story. You know, and of course, then it happened 6 more times as well following that. Was it a case of a little run in the team? Was it sort of up and down between Indianapolis?
Yeah, I was there for a little bit. Then I got sent back down While Milwaukee was just down the road from Chicago. So I went and joined Indianapolis to play a game in Milwaukee, and then got the phone call again from Bruce saying I was going back up the next day. So I ended up going back, played the rest of the way. You know, it was fun. It was good. I mean, yeah, okay. I played an average, I think, of 3 minutes. I think that was my ice time. A couple of games, I played 8 or 9 minutes, had a couple of shots on net. And, you know, I wish I would have had the 8 or 9 minutes every game, like to, but, you know, I was playing on the fourth line. And you know what? It was my run. I mean, I think I played 7 seconds in one game in Colorado with the Avalanche. And it's when they had Claude Lemieux, Patrick Waugh, Joe Sakic, Forsberg, all those guys. And I forget if we started the game or not, but Probert and Simpson were fighting their two fighters, which were Odgers, and I can't think of the other guy. And they told me before the faceoff, just so you know, Klutz, we're going here. So they ended up dropping the gloves. And the guy across from me at center, I think his name was Stefan Matt at the time, I slashed him in a shin pad. Say, hey, do you want to go too? Because everyone's going. And he was more of a skilled guy. He kind of looked at me and he says, nah, I'm good. So he skated to his bench. So I don't know. Maybe I should have just dropped the gloves and jumped him and got penalty minutes or something. But I skated away, went back, sat on the bench, and I had the best seat in the house there to watch those guys play.
No, so the names, Matt, a little bit of a smile there when you said the Avalanche, because you knew what I was going to say. Yeah. Being an Avalanche fan myself, some of those names sort of pricked my ears. But of course, you know, absolutely fantastic stories. Of course, you mentioned, you know, didn't get as many minutes as you liked in some games, but the experience and all of that that comes with it, of course, moments you'll never forget, I suppose.
No, I mean, it was a dream come true, right? Like, you grow up back home here in Canada, you play street hockey every night after school till your parents call you in for dinner and or supper, I guess. And, you know, it's just, yeah, it was unbelievable to see those guys. Like, they're at another level. And people always ask me, like, how it was. Like, to be honest, it was easier playing there than it was at other levels because they were so good. Like, the passes are on the tape. Like, you know, you just got to get open. And practices, like, the way they work and compete, like, it's, you know, they stay on top of it. Like, they don't slack off. And, you know, being a young guy there for the month and a half I was there, like, if you think of all the bag skates you had through your career, the bag skates I had in Chicago or when I stayed on the ice on my own because I was a healthy scratch some games, oh, my God, I don't know how I made it through those skates, but I did. And that was just how hard you had to work. You had to stay on top of it. And, yeah, because Denis Savard was the guy that was skating me when I was scratched. So he pushed me. He pushed me hard, and we had a good relationship. I got to know him. And, no, it was fun. It was a great experience. But to stay at that level, you always have to work hard. And obviously, I was known for a hard worker. I tried to stay and get back up, but it's hard to get back to that top level.
No, I can certainly imagine so. And of course, for the next few years, it was sort of, you know, around the AHL, the IHL with Albany and, you know, Orlando Solar Bears as well. And in 2002, you found yourself with the Houston Aeros. And that was got to be a pretty special season in your mind, winning the Calder Cup.
Yeah, it was. I mean, you know, all the years when you look back, when you retire, they're all special because to be part of a group and play with 20 guys, when that ends, like, I'm getting emotional now, when that ends, it's tough because you're going into the real world and you're not with these 20 buddies of yours. You sit around in a dressing room, and that's one thing I try to tell kids and kids that play for me now in junior, don't take it for granted when you're sitting in that dressing room. Like, enjoy every moment and take it all in, because one day it's gone. And yeah, you become a coach, you're still involved, but you're not that guy. You're not sitting beside Maddie or sitting beside Andreev or sitting beside Dooley and, you know, those friendships you make. So they're all special years, but that one, yeah, it was really special. I mean, this is another guy I got to see a couple of weeks ago. I was in Nashville at the NHL draft. We had our coaches meeting there, and we had a coaching thing we were part of with the NHL coaches. And I hadn't seen Todd McClellan since we won the Calder Cup that year, and when he saw me, we ended up having coffee together. He gave me the biggest hug, and you know what, we had a special relationship. Actually, maybe the relationship reminds me of maybe me and Maddie my first year. We had a couple of arguments, but we had me and Todd had a couple of arguments in Houston, and you know, I'll never forget this argument with him because I was only signed on an AHL contract with Houston, so I didn't belong to Minnesota Wild at the time. So there was three of us on AHL contracts. I was a captain. And we just had this huge meeting how he's going to reward the guys that come and competes and work hard and blah, blah, blah. So we go into this one game. I think in my mind, I'm having a great game. So I'm going out there. I'm hitting everything, blocking shots, doing what I got to do. And all of a sudden, I don't see the ice. And steam's coming out of my ears. I'm not happy. And he's my coach. And I'm just giving him the evil eye. Not happy at all. And I undid my chin strap. I had a bit of an, I was pissed. Like I was like, you know, I was really disappointed. What, and Cam Stewart was our assistant. He's like, Klutz, just do it back up. So I did it back up. Anyways, I shouldn't have done that. I was pretty disrespectful at the time, but I was so mad and upset about what we were told. And I thought I was doing that. So anyways, we get in the room and he kind of, you know, gave it to me. So I kind of gave it back to him. So standing there, I stood up and I gave it back, and you know, there was a bit of an exchange, but after that, about we both cooled down, and he came out of his office with two Budweisers, and he said, Klutz, come with me. And we went, sat in another room, and we had a conversation, and we had a beer together, and we patched things up. And you know, it's one thing, he was such a good coach for the players, and his door is always open. He's always there for you. And when he did say that, like that night, the orders came from on top, from the NHL teams who had to play. And obviously me not being on a NHL contract, I was on the American League one. I kind of lost my ice time that way, where the younger guys, there's people from Minnesota watching. So after we sat and we talked about it, yeah, I completely understood. And he understood where I came from. He liked that I had a lot of emotion and I cared. I want to play and I'm mad. But, you know, it was a great sit down with him. And anyhow, when I saw him in Nashville, yeah, he gave me a big hug. We exchanged cell numbers. And yeah, we're going to keep in touch now. And, you know, he was one of my mentors, and I learned a lot from him. Just with that little incident going, having that drink together, you know, he could have been mad, not spoken to me for days, but he was that type of guy. He was a nice guy, very intense, but he was a nice guy, and he was there for his players. So that was good. That was nice. And obviously we know how it ended. We had a special group of guys. Winning the Calder Cup was, you know, we played in Hamilton, Ontario. It was game seven. It was Montreal and Edmonton's farm team at the time. And they had a lot of good players there. They had Mike Komisarek on defense. They had Thomas Plekanec at center. Actually, it was a guy I was playing against that I had to shut down at the time. He was putting a lot of big numbers in the American League. But, yeah, we ended up beating them 3-0 in Hamilton in front of 18,000 people sold out in their arena. And, yeah, and we celebrated the Calder Cup. Hamilton was only an hour away from home, so Katie came down with the kids and her parents, my family. And, yeah, it was quite a fun night,
for sure. No, certainly sounds like it. One of the memories, and I think Matty might have to remember that one. That for next time, there's a couple of beers can heal anything. Apparently, Matty, I'm not sure if you've used that one already, but it'll certainly be in the playbook for this year, perhaps.
Yeah, not yet, not yet.
There'll be some stashed away in that dressing room for sure. Yeah. Moving on then, Klutz. So of course, a few more years, you know, throughout the AHL, the UHL, as well, the United Hockey League, and then that was back in Adirondack as well. So obviously, I'm sure you had a few more good years, you know, back there. Probably some people you still knew in the organization too. But then in 2006, the opportunity to come across the pond to join the Coventry Blaze came about. I know you'd already played a short while in Switzerland beforehand, sort of a couple of years earlier, but the opportunity to come to the UK, of course, another English-speaking country, probably a little bit easier than maybe somewhere else in the rest of Europe. And for, you know, for a big team like Coventry as well, one with a big budget and had ambitions, and you got straight to work there in Coventry. How did that come about, first of all?
Well, our team in Adirondack in the United League ended up folding. So Barry Melrose and Steve Levy were our owners. Like something happened during the season. We lost our head coach on a road trip. So it was hard on everyone, and it was hard on the ownership group to keep it going. So they ended up pulling the plug. We had an expansion draft. I was drafted by Port Huron. So I was speaking with Port Huron, went down to Port Huron with my family. We looked at places to live. They took us around town. I was going to sign there, and then I got an email from Paul Thompson. He ended up getting my name from Neil Martin and Barry Moore at the time. So we started chatting off email. I think it might have been AOL chat at the time, maybe even. So I came about talking with Paul Thompson, and then I had said no the first time we spoke. I said no to the offer. I was going to stay in Port Huron, and then a week later I got another offer from Tomo. I wanted a 2-year contract. I didn't want to move for 1 year with my family. I said, I'm not coming for 1 year. It's not fair to them. They're in school. The girls are starting school. So, you know, you got to start thinking about all that stuff with your family comes first. So I ended up, he emailed me back after I said a week later, I had said, yes, to Port Huron. He actually announced me I was coming. And then Tomo came back and made me an offer. And then we talked about it. And then I had to call Port Huron, Stan Drillia, and let him know I wasn't coming. And that was a tough phone call, but you know, I was talking with Barry Moore and Neil Martin and how it was ran in Coventry. So and Tomo being a coach, he's been around a long time and stuff. So yeah, so we ended up going to, we agreed with Tomo, and it took a while, but we got it done. And that's how I got to Coventry.
Sounds like a pretty difficult one, you know, especially when you've already given your word to Port Huron. But of course, I'm assuming no regrets on that one whatsoever, because obviously it lit the touch paper for 2 years in Coventry, and then arguably you'd say that give, you know, the green light to maybe Hull down the line as well. Maybe Hull would have never happened had he not, you know, made that switch in 2006.
Yeah, I mean, the way Tomo sold it was all about they wanted to win championships, and when you get older, I guess it doesn't matter if you get older or young, you want to win, right? It's not, you become to a certain age, yeah, goals and assists and points are nice, but you want to win those championships. You want to be remembered as a winner. They had, you know, you won stuff. And he really sold it on that. Barry Moore and Neil Martin, two of the guys I mentioned, also sold it. The group they had, Adam Calder, Dan Carlson. Then you add Danny Stewart that comes in and plays a role. Hard-nosed type guy, and you know, then you got Tom Watkins that he gave it his all, like 120% every time we played. Michael Tasker, all those guys that were part of it, and our defense was stacked. And then we had our goalie Trevor Koenig, who, you know, if we had an off night, he bailed us out. And you know, there's no regrets for sure going to Coventry. I mean, winning back-to-back elite league championships and Challenge Cup titles, and you know, to do that, it takes a special group. Anywhere, any team that can win back to back or more than back to back, it's dedication, and it's as you guys know, like playing in the elite league or any league, every weekend points are massive. You can't afford to drop points, whatever, if you want to make the playoffs or win a championship, win the title. Like, we can afford to take games off. So if we had a night off, you hope Trevor was on. And there was nights where, you know, we play a team like Hull. I'll never forget in Coventry, Hull beat us in overtime 4-3. And I remember how upset Tomo and the staff were, because that was a point we dropped to Hull, and Hull were at the time, they were at the bottom, and, you know, great on them. They played us well, and they had a great game. And actually Jeff Glowa scored, I'll never forget it because I was on the ice. He scored the game winner. He actually went through my legs off the draw and put it in. So it was basically my fault too. So, but those were points. Like, I remember going in back to the room, like, you know, being a North American guy, all right, we lost, we got a point. You didn't really understand at first. And then when you're there and you've been there, and now you start to get it that every weekend is game seven if you want to win this elite. So we had that group. Like, there was, you know, we had Ashley Tate in there. We had Adam Calder, who was probably one of the best goal scorers of the history of the Elite League, and Dan Carlson, one of the best two ways centermen I played with. You know, we were stacked. Like I played on a line. I centered Barry Moore and Ashley Tate, and then Dan Stewart played on the wing with Carlson and Calder. So we only had, well, we had three lines, but our two lines, we played a lot of minutes. And in our, with our other line, we had Michael Tasker and Tom Watkins. And I think Joe Henry might've been there the first year when we won. So we had our third line, like Tom Watkins killed all the penalties. He was unbelievable. He was one of those glue guys in our dressing room too. So, but yeah, no, it was special. I mean, to win back-to-back titles, that was something you'd never forget.
No, I can certainly, you know, see exactly what you're saying. Me and Matty were just talking just before you joined us, actually, about how tight some of the Elite League, well, the Elite League can be. We'll talk about it later, but your final year in Hull, I think there was 6 or 7 points between third place and ninth. And that's how much every single game matters in the Elite League. So, of course, 2 years in Coventry, great memories, you know, two back-to-back titles in terms of the Elite League and the Cup as well. Leaving Coventry, was that a sort of a tough one? What were the sort of... So you took a year out in between, didn't you? Because you went to Corpus Christi as a rookie coach.
Yeah, so I was player... Well, back in the Adirondack days, I was player assistant coach, helped the recruitment for 3 years in Adirondack in the United League, and then went to Coventry. I was player assistant coach to Tomo there too. And then I really wanted to coach. So obviously I was still putting up decent numbers, still pretty good hockey player at that time.
Certainly more than a point a game in the Elite League. Certainly could, you know, can't shy away from that.
But yeah, I played with some good players too, but it was hard because I just had signed a 2-year extension with Coventry to stay there. You know, I probably would have retired at Coventry Blaze if I would have ended up staying. I probably would have played maybe another 3 years and probably called it then. But a friend of mine, Chris May, called me at home and he's like, our coach just got to let go in Corpus Christi. And I had played with Chris in Adirondack. And he knew what kind of guy I was, you know, character, blah, blah, blah. You know, he knew I always wanted to coach. So he called me. He said, why don't you send your resume and just see what happens? Like, because I mentioned it to Pat Dunn at the time, the general manager, that you're going to send your resume in. So I sent my resume in, not thinking anything was going to happen. I had like no experience as a head coach, you know, still playing. So I ended up getting a phone call from Pat Dunn, got an interview over the phone, said thank you, didn't expect anything. We're all planning of going back to Coventry. Got another call. He's like, well, you made our top five. I'm like, oh, okay. Well, that's interesting. Do another interview over the phone. Another week goes by. I got another call. He's like, hey, what day works for you? We're going to fly you to Montreal, because he was from Montreal. I'd like to meet with you face to face. You made the top two. And I was like, okay, now I'm nervous. I'm like, okay, no, I've been a player assistant, helped out with coaches, but I was never the coach. So go to Montreal. He picks me up at the airport. We go eat a poutine in Montreal because he asked where I wanted to eat. I said, you know what? He said, love to have a poutine. He was kind of surprised because he thought I was going to say I want to go to some steakhouse and something like that. But I'm not. That's not my style. So I said, let's go have a poutine. So if people don't know what a poutine is, it's French fries, gravy, and cheese curds. So so we went for a poutine and we had it, and then we sat there, and he wrote on a napkin, made me an offer on a napkin, a 3-year contract, wrote the numbers down on a napkin, gave it to me. I'm looking at it. I said, okay, I'm going to walk away. I'm going to call my boss, Katie. So I called Katie, said, what do you think? So we go back. I put different numbers down. He goes, yeah, done deal. Shook my hand. I was named new head coach just like that right there. And I was kind of in shock because I wasn't expecting it. So then it was right to work right away. Signed three players right after we ate. I call these three guys. Actually, Chris May was one of them, Ryan Bennett, all guys I played with. So they signed right on the dot. They were waiting for me to see if I was going to get the job because they had other offers to go play somewhere else on East Coast or Central Hockey League at the time. So yeah, that's how I ended up going. And then I was a first year coach in Corpus with 10 games left in the season. We were in the playoffs. We were a couple points out of third place. We were in fourth place. There's five teams in our division. I got called in. I was let go. Part of it, which is another story here, but part of it was I traded away one of our defensemen from a guy that became a friend of mine, became a friend of Maddie, became a huge figure in Hall, Jeremy Tendler. So he did not agree with me making that trade for Tendler. I had done all my homework on Jeremy. He scored goals in college, the coaching staff had nothing but good things to say about Jeremy. So I traded him. He wasn't playing where he was. I think he was in Tulsa. He was in the stands. So I needed a pure goal scorer. If you look at Jeremy's stats, he's been a goal scorer everywhere. So made the trade, traded away this big defenseman. It was either a sixth or seventh. But when I had another defenseman coming from a lower league who was over a point per game, ran a power play. We didn't have that type of guy. So basically, I got rid of a slow, big defenseman to bring a goal scorer and a power play guy that we needed, because with toughness, we had the toughest team in the Central League at the time, because that's what the owners wanted. So we had four heavyweight fighters in our lineup. So, yeah, traded for tens, and the general manager at the time didn't agree with that trade. But I think it was part of it. He didn't win that argument with me when I made that trade. And I don't know if he didn't like the fact a lot of players say there could have been jealousy there, because I was pretty popular with my players. I mean, I was players can approach me anytime. And I think I'm a coach's player. So, but who knows what the real reason was, because we were in the playoffs. So there's no reason. I was a first year coach, rookie coach, first year of the team. We had 30 some days to put a team together, but anyhow, it happened and I learned from that. And, but that's how I met Jeremy Tendler. So then that's how we got him in Hall. So yeah, anyhow. Yeah.
On my notes for sort of today's, obviously I knew you had links with Jeremy before Hall. I never actually noticed you had links with Jozef Sladek. Matt, you would have seen his name pop up on my notes as well, because a core memory of me as a young Stingrays fan is Jozef knocking someone to the ice, then coming over and asking me if I liked what he did. so he's that's a core memory for me, and I never actually knew he was with you in Corpus as well. Myself and Matty were loving this chat with Sylvan so much that we decided on the fly to turn this into a two-parter. So don't worry, part two will be with you in just over 24 hours, in which the whole part will be dedicated to talking about Sylvan's time in Hull. And what he misses the most about the city. We'll also talk a little bit of Seahawks and how he's been following them from home as well. So make sure you stay tuned to Behind the Curtain, and make sure you like, share, follow and subscribe on Spotify, Apple Podcasts and YouTube. Let everyone know about the wonderful work that's going on here at Behind the Curtain. And I very much hope you enjoyed part one with Sylvain Cloutier.